This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for November 10th, 2010, Episode 8, sponsored by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World, and good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Yeah, howdy, Jamie. I'm great. It's terrific. We have a fun show planned today. A little chilly, though. I mean, I wore an extra coat just in case I got cold with all the conversation we have today. But we'll get to that.
So.
Are you? Are you? In
yes.
Phoenix? Yeah,
yes.
You had to dig that out of the mothballs, I bet.
I did.
Well, this is a topic, though. You grew up, we were talking a little bit about winter today, and we'll get into that in a minute, but you grew up in Atlanta. So talking about winter, I mean, you had occasional bursts of winter, I assume, and then it got warm again.
Yes, you know, that's what's great about the weather in Atlanta is you will have like 3 or 4 really cold days, and then it gets up to 70. So it's not the biggest challenge in the world compared to other places on taking care of horses in the winter. But spending time in Lexington, Kentucky, and then spending time east of Cleveland, Ohio, that taught me all I needed to know about winter and horses.
Like east of Cleveland, especially. I mean,
oh,
geez.
My gosh. In the snow belt, you know, in like Mentor, Ohio and Chagrin Falls, you just get so much lake effect snow. And in Atlanta, it might snow every couple years. So that was definitely a wake-up call living east of Cleveland. But how is the weather in Lexington right now?
Well, actually, we've had it chilly the last week, but today it's supposed to be up to 70, and we're supposed to be in the 70s for most of the week. So it's absolutely beautiful here in Lexington. Jennifer and I took a walk around the block yesterday, and, you know, the leaves have almost all come off the trees now, but it was just a gorgeous day. And, you know, you know winter's coming. You know that. You start to feel it in your bones. But you know, you take these warm days as they come along, and you really enjoy them because you know what's next.
So, yeah,
hey, before we get into all that wintry, cold, burry stuff, let's talk about something I'm very excited about is we got 2 new affiliates. Yay. Yesterday, thehorseandhabit.com, which is a really cool blog that I recommend everybody check out. It's called thehorseandhabit.com. They added us to their website. So if there's any new listeners from The Horse and Habit, welcome. And something we're really excited about also is horsechannel.com. I think everybody that's been in the horse world has been to Horse Channel. Well, we're right there in the middle of their page. So we thank everybody over at Horse Channel for adding us to their website. And a shout-out to any new listeners from Horse Channel this morning.
Yeah, we sure do appreciate it. Now, Glenn, you have a special challenge for potentially all the new listeners that we have from these new affiliates, and it involves Facebook.
Yeah, this is for all the old listeners and the new listeners. This is for everybody. I have a challenge for you. We want to get over 300 fans on the show today on our Facebook fan page at Horses in the Morning. We want to get over 300. So what we're asking you to do is right now, if you're in front of your computer, if you're near your computer, go onto your page and post a what's on your mind and tell everybody that you want them to check out Horses in the Morning on Facebook and become a fan. So you can use the suggest to friends on the Horses in the Morning page or just post it on your wall. We want you to post on there. We're really trying to get over 300. We're going to do updates on the show today. And hopefully at the end of the show, by 10:30 Eastern, we will have gone over 300 fans on Horses in the Morning. So that's my challenge. Help us out here to get over 300 fans. And all you do is go to Facebook and search for Horses in the Morning and you'll find us.
Yeah, and you know, we'll announce our 300th fan on the air. And also, you know, what you can do when you are a fan of Horses in the Morning is we'll tell you what we're going to talk about before we even start talking about it. So you can call your buddies, you can call your friends, you can be a part of the show and listen that way, and you'll know what's coming up for us. So like today, we're talking about all the cold weather stuff. We have given you plenty of notice ahead of time to let you know who we're going to be talking to, and you can come up with questions for our guests. You can call in to be a part of it. So that is it. And we also announced the winner of the daily prize. Yes, daily prize. So you can find out that way on Facebook who is the winner and if it could be you.
And I just noticed, Jamie, that we just gave a shout out to the Horse and Habit. Well, she posted this morning and she said on our Facebook fan page, it says it was a chilly at the barn last night. I'm looking forward to horses in the morning this a.m. as they talk about getting ready for winter. It's coming whether we like it or not. What's the coldest winter you can remember at the barn? Maybe last year. So, well, thank you to her for posting that. We appreciate it. Hey, you know, I also wanted to mention a little bit before we get into our show today that you and I and Jennifer, well, all three of us have some travel plans coming up. You're leaving first, I believe. You're leaving, heading out tomorrow, Thursday, for New Orleans.
Yeah, you know, I wonder whether to call it New Orleans, because that's how you do it in the South, or New Orleans. But yeah, I'm going there for a wedding with my husband this coming week. So we leave Thursday night. I won't be on the air. Fortunately, we have some fantastic fill-in, which you can tell us about, while I'm gone on Friday, and then I'll be back Sunday night. So I've never been to New Orleans, so it should be an exciting adventure. And I believe you guys are going down to one of the most beautiful places in the world, Ocala, Florida.
Yes, we are. We're leaving for Ocala on Friday. Friday, we'll have Helena B. from the Stable Scoop and the Tack and Habit Show filling in. My first co-host ever on the Horse Radio Network will be filling in for you on Friday, so that should be fun. And then we're heading down, we're driving actually, down to Ocala. My brother lives down there, and I have three brothers, and their families, we all get together once a year for what we call a reunion. And we meet at a different place in the country every year. So we have it for a long weekend every year. Last year we got together in Nashville. We had a great time in Nashville. We all bought cowboy hats. A lot of us bought cowboy boots. We went to the Grand Ole Opry, and I got to tell you, that was excruciating for me. I barely could get through 2 hours of the Grand Ole Opry. I realize that's probably one of the oldest running radio shows ever. But they must have had every 90-year-old old country singer that is still alive that night. And
but who was at the end? It was worth sitting through.
Did you tell them who was at the end?
It was Charlie Daniels.
Yeah, that made it worth sitting through. Charlie Daniels came up and rocked the house for about 10 minutes. But I could have used more of Charlie Daniels and less of the old country, which is,
we're
talking old country.
I know, but I got to jump in here because you just went down a peg in my dad's book, because my daddy buys front row tickets to the Grand Ole Opry once a year, doesn't even know who's playing, goes up and has the best time, and to somebody like him who grew up listening to that old country, this is like the Disney Channel of his age, you know, going up there and singing. So he loves to go. He even goes on the Grand Ole Opry cruise every year with all those 90-year-old artists.
Oh, my gosh.
He loves it. So I find it funny. You're like, oh, it was terrible. My dad's like, that was the greatest show ever.
Well, you know, Dad, I'll give a shout-out to your dad and say you do not have to worry about losing your ticket to me next time when you want to go. I will not be sitting in your seat. But we did have a good time. Anyway, it was fun, and it was an experience you got to do once. So that was one of the things. But when we head to Florida, we're going to be actually recording from Ocala. We're going to be at one of our sponsors on Monday, Easy Signs Online. We're going to be recording from their offices Monday morning and maybe Tuesday morning as well. And Sunday, we're very excited. We're all heading down. The whole family's heading down to Disney Studios. So we're going to head to Walt Disney World. The Disney Studios for the day. They have a lot of new stuff since Jennifer and I have been there. So we are really looking forward to heading to Florida next week. And hopefully we'll be set up and everything will be working well for our first remote on Horses in the Morning, Monday and Tuesday.
Well, that's very exciting. Speaking of Jennifer, though, let's talk to Jennifer. What is coming up on today's show? We're going to talk about the winter, so who's coming up?
Oh, today's specials are we have Jackie Baker with the Blog It segment. We're going to have her again coming in really regularly to tell us what's hot and what's not in the equine blogosphere. And I think she's got some really cool blogs and blog entries that pertain to winter and wintertime with the horse folks. We also have Jeff Smith, president of the North American Ski Joring Association. Say that three times fast. Really cool, like one of those what you might call extreme horse sports. We're going to talk to Jeff a little bit about where ski joring came from and where it's going.
And what it is.
Yeah, and what it is. What the heck is ski joring anyway? It sounds like a dish you might get at a New Age restaurant. The Horse Health Report is going to be here again this week, and we're going to be chit-chatting about horse subjects. And I think there's something about horses eating weird things on the agenda today. Yeah, horses with odd taste preferences.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, today has sort of become a thing for us now. It's kind of our shtick. Is we play a little bit of music that I put together to get us in the mood for the day's call-in topic. So I have that here for you right now. Take a listen.
Over the ground lies a mantle of white, a heaven of diamonds shines down through the night. Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chill.
Well, there you go, Walking in a Winter Wonderland by Allie and AJ on their album Acoustic Hearts of Winter. So that should get you a little bit in the mood, doesn't it?
Absolutely does, considering, you know, I was actually freezing this morning when I woke up, and it was 58 degrees. So, you know, you just get used to whatever weather comes your way, I guess. So, yeah, it's even cold here in Phoenix. I'm breaking out the horse blankets for any day now. As soon as it gets kind of close to 45, which is usually pretty close to our low. So, I know you guys up there, do you have Beaker's blanket out and ready?
No, he's kind of hairy, dude. So Beaker's one of those hairy quarter horses, and I don't think we're going to need a blanket for a little while for him. He grows some fur, so we don't have to worry about that too much.
You know, in the fall, when the woolly bear caterpillars come out, sometimes they're all brown. He looks like the all-brown woolly bear caterpillar.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But we want to hear about your hardest winter day or, you know, winter day or winter week or whatever. We want to hear about your hardest winter on your farm or on horseback if you had a ride that was very memorable because of the wind and the snow or whatever, you got stuck in a snowstorm or you just had one of those exceptional days that will go down in your memory there at the farm, the barn roof blew off, whatever it was. We want to hear from you today about your hardest winter at the farm. Tell us your winter memories, that one that just you will never forget for whatever the reason was. That's what we want to hear about today. And five callers today, not just one, but five callers today will get a one-month subscription of up to three horses each to FeedXL. And that's a $25 value. And let me tell you what FeedXL is, and we want to welcome them as a new sponsor here to Horses in the Morning. FeedXL does all the smart stuff that it takes to formulate and balance a horse's diet. It takes all the science and math that a doctor of equine nutrition learns and makes it all super easy and fun for you to use. You go to feedxl.com, you plug in some information about your horse, you plug in all the information about what you feed your horse, and they have over 2,500 feeds and supplements already in there. They have calculated every vitamin, everything about horse nutrition, and it takes all those details that you put in about your horse and what you feed him, and FeedXL does some serious math and print out, it gives you a printout of charts and graphs of everything that you're feeding your horse. Are you feeding too much of one thing? Are you feeding too little of another? FeedXL takes a look at all of that. Do you need more hay? Do you need less supplements? FeedXL can actually save you money by showing exactly what your horses need. And you can find out more about that at FeedXL.com. And we're actually giving away five one-month subscriptions where you can put up in information about up to three of your horses. It takes the breed. It takes how much work. It takes everything into consideration. And, you know, Jamie, I don't know about you. You have a lot of horses. You have what, five or six there at the farm now. If you're like the rest of us horse people, you're never quite sure if you're feeding the right thing, the right supplement, when you're feeding it, all of that.
No, absolutely not. So, you know, a big part of when I was working at the equine hospital and clinic was education to people on what they're feeding their horse. Now, most people don't know how much to feed, and if you underfeed them, then you're going to cause problems. If you overfeed them, you're going to cause lots of problems. So that would be pretty cool. It's like your own little personal equine nutritionist. So I think that's a pretty cool prize. FeedXL, thank you so much for giving these out. We really appreciate it. Now, I would like to let you know, Glenn, we're going to take stories on the kind of the worst winter day that you've ever had. Of course, our phone number is 347-637-3238. And I had one of those days, shockingly enough, east of Cleveland, Ohio. Can you believe that?
No surprise there.
No, but, you know, it was one of those things where the magic of somebody upstairs really, really watched out for me and my you know, my kids. They're your kids. They're your family. I just moved to a new barn. I wanted to have somewhere with a covered arena to ride, obviously. And up there, I went to a farm that had a covered arena, and the stalls were on one side of it. So you walk out in the hallway, you take them up to the entrance of the covered arena, and you'd ride, and then you could take them right back and put them in their stalls. And she had just opened up her farm for boarding, and I was the first boarder to come there, and I brought three horses with me. And lo and behold, about two nights later after boarding there, they had the biggest snowstorm that I've ever seen. And I'm sure it was a pretty record one for Cleveland. And I got a phone call the next morning that said, you need to get out here to the barn right now. Of course, it's hard for me to get out to the barn because you're waiting for the snowplows to come. I head out there. The entire barn roof and covered arena collapsed. And my horses were in the stalls. And the only place that the roof did not collapse was over the last four stalls. The entire thing was gone.
And that's where your horses were?
And that's where my horses were. If I'd have picked any other stall, the roof would have been down on them because of all the snow. It just crushes the weight of the roof. You don't realize how heavy snow is, but think of that much water on top of something, and you realize that's a lot of weight. So we had to take chainsaws and get the horses out of the stalls. And I'm going to tell you, not a scratch on one of them. Granted, they were a little bit freaked out, but unbelievably enough, not a scratch. Can you believe it?
I can't imagine you. I know how emotional you are. I can't imagine when you showed up at that barn and saw what was going on. You must have been a wreck.
Oh, my gosh, you have no idea. I mean, I am overly emotional as well. They had told me on the phone coming up, they go, you know, it's going to be very scary when you see it. The roof collapsed, but your horses are inside and they're okay. So obviously that was a short-lived boarding situation because then I had to move again. But that's the thing that you have to do, you know. It's just part of it.
Well, we want to hear your stories. We want to hear the. I have one for you, too, that I'll tell you later in the show. That yours was a night. Ours was a week of that kind of thing. So we'll tell a little bit about that. It was something that Jennifer and I will never forget. We have two grand prizes for the month, though. A $500 shopping spree from Equestrian Collections You can choose anything you want from EquestrianCollections.com. You can buy gifts. You can buy yourself stuff. Doesn't matter. We're going to pick one caller that basically every caller that calls in this month is eligible for the grand prizes, and that's the $500 shopping spree. And we're going to give another winner your choice of any Vespucci bridle and reins worth up to $600. They are absolutely gorgeous, and they can be found at worldequestrianbrands.com. Well, Jamie, we're going to get to our first segment today. This is a regular segment we're going to be doing here on Horses in the Morning. We're calling it Blog It, and it's Jackie Baker is going to be helping us out with this segment called Blog It. She is the mastermind behind RegardingHorses.com, one of the first and best blogs in the horse world, and she's going to stop by to fill us in on what's hot in the equine blogosphere. Jackie, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm good, Glenn. Hi, Jamie. How are you guys?
Good morning.
And, Jamie, I want to tell you that Jackie is from only about an hour from where that barn collapsed. That's where she is, in Ohio, and near Akron. So she knows all about that winter weather.
Uh-huh. I do.
So I actually went on your blog. Yeah, Jackie, I went on your blog, and I did appreciate the winter weather chatter that you have going on there. And I'm trying to educate myself a little bit on the blanketing and when to blanket your horse, and I noticed you kind of covered that.
Yes, that's been an interesting topic for me because I've just had my horse for about 2 years now, and while I've ridden horses my entire life, I rode my mom's horse, I leased horses, this is the first time that I've owned one myself. And had to make all of the decisions, and so I tend to kind of freak out about these things and go crazy researching them. So that's been one of those big topics, because right now it's getting down to about 27 degrees at night, so it's making for some cold nights and cold mornings here in Ohio. But the weird thing is we're still getting up to almost 60 degrees during the day a lot of the time. So I was going crazy debating on whether I needed to start blanketing my horse or not. And so I kind of put that plea out there to say, hey, people, what do you do? What do you think? Because it's always fun, especially on a blog, to get feedback from your readers and find out what they do. I had to laugh because I put this out there, and one of the very first responses I got on Facebook actually was from somebody in California saying, it's crazy hot here. If we put blankets on, our horses would melt. But, you know, yeah, you probably don't have to worry about this so much. But for a lot of other
temperatures. By the way, we don't like that lady much.
So it's been interesting because there are so many different theories on blanketing, and this is a really hot topic on blogs right now. You've got all of the major websites and retailers who are pushing their blankets and doing blanket sales and discounts. You've got a lot of different bloggers talking about what they do with their horses when it gets cold, and it's a pretty popular topic right now. You know, you get a lot of people who are still showing or who work their horses harder in the winter, who have been blanketing since before it got down to 60 degrees. I actually keep my thoroughbred at a quarter horse barn, and they have been in full blankets for over a month now, and sleazies and everything, just to keep them from growing those long hair coats. So we've got different people who do blanket, some people who like beaker, grow tons of hair, and don't need to blanket their horses. We got people who, kind of like me, let our horses grow a little bit of that winter hair coat first, and then once it starts to get below freezing regularly, then we start blanketing for the rest of the winter. For me, I'm not showing or anything. I don't mind if my horse gets a little bit of hair, but I do tend to work him pretty hard in the winter, and I don't want to have to be spending hours and hours at the barn waiting for him to dry out. So I let him get a little bit of a base coat first and then keep him blanketed just so he doesn't get overheated. It was kind of funny. One of my best blogger friends from ahorseandahalf.com actually just did a post this morning that she's going to leave her thoroughbred naked this winter. She's always blanketed just because in her area in New Jersey, that's just what everybody does. But her horse tends to get overheated, and so she said that she's not going to be blanketing this year, even though it's going to drive her crazy because she wants to pamper him and do it just because it feels good to her. It may not be the best thing for her horse, so she's going to leave him without this year. So there's thoughts and a lot of different people doing a lot of different things.
I'm one of those people, and I'll probably get emails, who believe that we probably over-blanket our horses. you know, we tend to not blanket as much as other people. We were always shocked when we were in retail, Jackie, how many people from Florida were buying the 400 weight blankets, you know? It was amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, probably the show people.
Yeah.
The show people are ones who, you know, who shave their horses down to nothing. You know, they wear them and things like that. Is there anything else you guys do to get ready for winter there?
The other, you know, major topic going on is how you feed horses in the winter. I've got a thoroughbred. I follow a lot of other bloggers who have thoroughbreds and horses who tend to be hard keepers. So the other really popular topic right now is how you change your feeding and management schedule for the winter, because horses burn a lot more calories to stay warm in the winter, and so then they need more calories so that they can help, you know, keep their weight up and stay warm enough and just stay healthy. And so one of the popular topics and things that come up a lot is feeding freeze choice hay, so that they constantly have something to eat that, you know, keeping their digestive system going creates a little bit of heat, but also gives them the extra calories they need. You know, I know a lot of people who do the beet pulp thing or do nice warm bran mashes once or twice a week. So, you know, feeding and blanketing are really kind of the two main topics that you'll see in the blogosphere right now as we head into winter.
So, Jackie, tell us what's your most vivid memory of winter, that day that you'll just never forget?
Oh,
at
goodness.
The farm.
Last winter here in Ohio, we literally got twice as much snow as we do on average. I don't remember exactly what the measures are, but like if we normally get on average 30 inches of snow in the winter, we had 60 inches of snow in the winter last year. I mean, we had feet of snow on the ground. And after we had one really, really bad snowstorm, I'm thinking it was late January, early February, I drove out to the barn and it was literally snowed in. There were snow drifts that were twice as tall as I was, up against the side of the barn, blocking the doors. And for about a month and a half, the only door on the entire barn that we could open was the small people door in the side.
Oh no!
So
the only door we could use to bring in bedding and hay and turning out horses, everything went through the little people door for a good month and a half last winter.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Oh, were the horses nuts when they finally got to go out?
A little bit, but a lot of our horses, like mine, there's a set of them there that we like to keep turned out, mostly the non-show horses. And so they had maybe a week where they were in their stalls, but then they got to go out the rest of the winter. All of the show horses that are at the barn that were in most of the winter, they're kind of used to it and didn't really care that much.
Now, Jackie,
our horses,
in this kind of weather, are you able to ride at all?
Oh, heck yeah.
Where?
Never stop. Well, we have an indoor arena. Unfortunately,
oh.
The stalls are in one end of the barn, and the indoor arena is in the other end of the barn. So, you know, the stall, I always open right up into the indoor arena. So once you're inside the barn, you're good to go. No problem there. You know, two winters ago, we had one of the coldest winters on record. It was the first winter I had my horse. I said, I don't care how cold it was. I put on a ton of clothes and went out riding anyways. It was negative 20 degrees. The wind chill, and I just went riding.
And Jackie, if you remember right, I was there with you one morning, and will you please verify for everybody listening today that I actually can clean a stall?
Glenn actually can clean a stall.
What?
He did.
Come on.
He did. He was pretty handy with a pitchfork.
Hey, I'm America's horse husband. I would have to know how to clean a stall.
Oh, yes. He does, if he has to.
Yeah, that is the first requirement.
Nice of him. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was really sick, and so he got lots of brownie points for that.
Yes,
Aww,
I think I did. And it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun doing that. It was about minus 30, but it was. You know, that's another thing. Two things that I remember about winter vividly, and I'll tell my big story later, but. But as ice buckets, unless you live in the Northeast or somewhere in the North, you don't even know what ice buckets are. But you actually, I don't know, Jackie, did you guys used to make pyramids out of your ice bucket?
No, I haven't ever done that one.
Yeah, well, you know what an ice bucket is. It's you come out in the morning and all the water left in the bucket has frozen, and you dump it out,
yep.
and it comes out looking like an ice
yep.
bucket. Well, we used to stack them up and make pyramids out of them. So that's one of my memories of the worst winters. Well, Jackie, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate you joining us on your Blog It segment, and we look forward to having you back again to talk about what's hot in the blogosphere.
All right. Hopefully next time it won't be so chilly.
I'm afraid it will. Probably be chillier.
Warmer
to be in
topic.
December. There you go. All right. Well, think warm. Thank you, Jackie.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Hey,
all
Glenn,
right.
our sponsor for this half hour, just want to remind you, it is Back on Track Products, and there's a company that we just love to offer products to improve lifestyle and mobility, and they've been the mainstay in European therapeutic products for years, plus they're used and endorsed by many of the top dressage, eventing, and show jumping riders worldwide. Of course, we're talking about Back on Track. If you're looking for a quality holiday gift for any horse lover that'll truly benefit their horse, then look no further than any of Back on Track's exercise boots, bell boots, saddle pads, or sheets. Visit backontrackproducts.com today, or you can give them a call at 888-758-9836.
And we thank Back on Track for being part of the Horses in the Morning show. You're listening to Glenn the Geek and Jamie Jennings. And I think, Jamie, we have our next guest ready to go. And I'm so excited.
Yeah.
We have with us Jeff Smith, president of the North American Ski Joining Association. And we're going to learn all about what that is. And apparently it was an Olympic sport at one time. Who knew? I'd never heard of it before. This is the first. So let's see if we have Jeff on here. Jeff, are you on the line?
I certainly am. Good morning.
Well, good morning.
Now, Jeff, straight out of the gate, I have to ask you, what is ski joring?
Ski joring today is a highly specialized event that comprises three individuals, the horse, the rider, and the skier. And basically, we go full speed down a course, whether it's straight or curved, and we go around slalom gates, over jumps, and we grab different kinds of obstacles. It's a timed event, nationally sanctioned, and the skier, we're going full speed with a horse, and the skier is up to speeds of 40 to 50 miles an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
In a nutshell.
Well, so the horse is galloping along, because I did watch your YouTube video that you guys have on YouTube about ski joring, and the horse is basically galloping straight, and the skier is going back and forth. It looks like going over jumps, and, I mean, I'm assuming there's some sort of thing they're supposed to accomplish, grabbing things and going around their course?
Yep. Like I said, it's a timed event, and the timer starts when the skier crosses the starting line, and it ends when the skier crosses the finish line. And you have seconds added, penalties added to your raw score. If you miss a gate, it's a 5-second penalty. If you miss a ring, it's a 2-second penalty.
So the horse is galloping on the snow. You know, our listeners immediately are going to want to know, how does a horse gallop in the snow? Is there a special shoe you put on them? Is there a special, you know, do you put borium on their shoes? Do they even wear shoes? Talk to us about that.
Well, first and foremost, the condition of the track is most important. So we basically wouldn't run down the course with anything more than 4 to 6 inches of snow. Most of the major races are packed with snowpacks from local ski areas, so typically the footing is very good, clean footing. Now, many people use borium and studs. Most of the competitors do. However, many of the competitors run barefoot as well. And since the track typically there's no ice on it, it's good footing for the horse, and it's great snow for the skier.
Now, where do people do this?
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's somewhere up north, but, you know, because we don't have any ski joring here in Phoenix, Arizona. Where can you do this?
Well, it's actually all over the north, the west, and up into Canada at this point. Here in the east, we do it primarily in New Hampshire, in New London, New Hampshire, and also Newport, New Hampshire. And then up north in the east, we've got races in Quebec City this year, the Quebec Winter Carnival, and also in north of Montreal. And out west, it's done in many of the states, from in Colorado. Leadville, Colorado is one of the oldest and most prestigious, famous races out west, and that's right down the center of town. We also have them up in Montana. Whitefish is another large race in Montana that'll be in the end of January this year. And it looks like in Red Lodge, Montana, is another traditional race that's been around for at least 20 to 30 years. But really, there's going to be a lot more races out west in the past few years, including Idaho Montana and in those areas, Colorado.
Now, I have a couple of questions here for you, Jeff. This is just fascinating. I watched the video. I watched a couple of videos this morning of ski joining, and I had never heard of it. But tell us a little bit about the history of it. It goes way back in time, and was it an Olympic sport at one time?
Yes, it was. And like most sports we have today, it started out as some mode of transportation or work. And in the mid-1800s, the Norwegians used reindeer to pull themselves across flatlands on skis.
Reindeer?
So that's one of the – I'm sorry?
I said reindeer? They used reindeer?
Yes, yep. They still use reindeer today for pulling buggies and wagons and all sorts of stuff. And then in the early 1900s, we actually have pictures and quite a few pictures of ski joring. And this is riderless. This is without the rider on the horse. But we've got pictures and news articles from New Hampshire. I think a lot of Norwegians settled in this area in New Hampshire. And so they brought with it ski joring. And we've got it seen in Hanover, New Hampshire, and Newport, New Hampshire. And then around 1928 is where it was a spectators type event in the Olympics. Too bad it didn't go further than that, and someday we would like to see it in the Olympics again, not a spectator, but as an event. But in the 40s, is where it started to take on today's type of racing. Many of the 10th Mountain trained Army personnel when they came back from Europe. They were cowboys, and they started pulling skiers and behind the horses. And they'd basically have a big drag race where they'd put all the horses and all the skiers, and they'd go on a big field, and whoever made it to the end of the field was the winner. And that was the start of today's modern sport.
Do you mean,
wow,
Jeff, that
neat.
Whoever made it to the end of the field alive, or whoever made there first?
Both. you had to pass both of those criteria to make it.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you, I watched the video. It seems like you use all different kinds of horses. I have never seen a Belgian run so fast in my entire life as that Belgian was pulling that skier in the snow.
Big Ben, that's his name. He is, he's an amazing Belgian. But he doesn't think he's a Belgian, I don't think. But
no, he thinks he's a thoroughbred.
I think he does. Yep, he's
got to be related to
Zenyatta
horses. Somehow. You know?
Yeah. So,
now,
I was just going to say, really, any horse can run, and it's not that hard on the horse, but certainly the faster the horse, the better. So we do see a lot of thoroughbreds off the track. We've got all sorts of quarter horses, appendix quarter horses, Morgans, you name it. It's Paplingers. We've had Icelandic ponies pulling. So there's just quite a crew of horses out there.
How do they hook?
Now,
the rope is hooked to the saddle. Is that how it works? Because there's a rope that comes from what appears to be the saddle. And then the skier holds on to the rope, and that leads to another question: is are the riders and the skiers, are they interchangeable, or do one person ride and one person ski?
Well, first of all, the rope is attached to the saddle, and typically you'll have a good rigging on the front breast collar, and we try and tie as close to the breast collar as we can. Some of the Westerners, they daily off the horn, so they'll have a loop and they'll just slap it right on the horn. In the East, most of us basically tie off of a rigging and a carbiner off the back cantle of the saddle. The rope is typically 33 feet for a straight course and up to 50 feet for a curved course, because we do have curved courses that are horseshoe-shaped and look like a J-hook and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
To answer your second question, most people are either skiers or riders, although there are several of us that will do both, that can ski and that do ride. But I'd say 60%, you've got hot skiers, and then you've got separate riders, and they stay that way. But we do have a few that cross over, and someday we'd like to have a division where you have to basically ride one of the runs and ski one of the runs. That's one of our new divisions we'd like to
That'd
do at some
cool.
point.
So to kind of paint a picture for everybody listening, and we're talking with Jeff Smith, president of the North American Ski Joring Association, and you can tell me how accurate this is. To paint a picture, it's a horse that has a rope attached to the saddle and a rider on it, and it's attached to a skier who more looks like they're water skiing than snow skiing at the same time. Am I kind of correct? It's a mix of snow skiing, water skiing, and horseback riding.
Yep, you've got it painted pretty well. There's two other things that are in there that really set it aside. Especially on the starts, the skier gets pounded pretty hard by snowballs off the feet of the horse. So it's typical to have a pair of broken goggles.
I didn't even think of that.
Sometimes horseshoes come flying back. I've been hit in the head twice with horseshoes. That's why we wear helmets. I think the other thing is that you wouldn't see in water skiing is extremely fast acceleration. Horses don't give much when you're cutting, and you really get accelerated real quickly because you're on snow. You're not on water. So I think those two things. You can just imagine the wind and dodging ice balls and then the crowd screaming right next to you. It's pretty thrilling to be the rider and the skier.
And you're doing mobiles, too.
Yeah, Glenn. How can people get involved, Jeff? Do you have a website that they can go to check this out and see it besides typing in ski joring on YouTube?
There's actually several websites that the national organization is NASJA for North American Ski Joring Association .com. And then depending on what part of the country you live in, we've got a website here in the East, which is NESJA.com. And then several of the organizers out West have their own websites as well. Scott Ping has one from Whitefish. So if you Google Whitefish, Montana, you'd be able to see his website. Paul Copper from Leadville, Colorado, has a real nice website with lots of pictures on it. So there are several websites out there as well as the North American website.
So do you end up with people, Jeff, of all ages and male, female competing against each other, I assume? Is that how it works?
It is. Exactly. And what's really nice is that you're mixing, many families, the husband is a skier and the wife is a rider, and the kids do both. And so we get a really good mixture of families that compete. And you get to meet a lot of different kinds of riders because it's not, eventing, it's not mounted shooting. It's a mixture of all sorts of kind of people, as well as the skiers. So we get a really good mix of people, and everybody are really nice, friendly people.
Now, I noticed, too, in the video that, and as you said, it started years ago, with really long lining. There was no rider, and the horse was just pulling them along with the lines. Do they still do that at all, the long lining?
Actually, they do in Switzerland. We haven't done it here in the East. We've had some demonstrations of it, and a few of us do it. Not, I don't, but some of us do it with our horses. But it's actually there's a website, Snow White Turf, in Switzerland, and they've been operating for almost 150 years where they're pulling on a regular oval course on a lake, and they'd be like a buggy behind you, a silky, only they're on skis. So there is some that is done that way.
Now, Jeff, today we are talking about different, like the worst winter day that you've ever had regarding your horses. What do you think, you know, we've had people call in and talk about many, many different types of bad days. You know, mine was a roof collapsed in the barn. Somebody else said, Jackie Baker said that she couldn't get in or out of the barn because there was so much snow. Do you have one specific day that goes down as the worst winter day that you've had?
No, I don't think so. I think most every day that we race has its good and its bad. We've had some pretty cold, windy days, like 35-mile headwinds with temperatures at around 10 degrees. So it was, you know, several degrees below zero, apparent wind. Those are pretty bad days. But
you're making Jamie just frozen to her seat out there in Arizona right now.
Well, you got to remember, there's no such thing as a cold day. It's just a poorly dressed day.
Ah, I like it.
You can tell he's from the Northeast.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much for being on with us. We've learned so much about ski-joring today. Sounds like fun. Sounds like it would be interesting to give a try. And we'll post links to your website and on our website at horsesinthemorning.com and today's show notes, so you can check them out there. And, well, good luck. Your seasons must be just starting then.
They are, and we're really looking forward to a great winter, lots of racing, and I urge everybody to try it and come out and join us, and who's got a horse or knows how to ski. We're always looking for new members.
All right, Jeff, thanks a lot. We'll have you back again maybe in the middle of the season to see see how it's going.
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to do it.
All right, bye, Jeff.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye.
So that was Jeff from the Ski-Joring Association of North America. We appreciate him being on. Did that make you want to get out there behind a horse and go skiing?
You know, what it did is when he mentioned the fact that there's families that do it, husbands that ski and wives that ride, that is exactly what my husband and I do. We should, if we didn't live in Phoenix, we might have to travel north with the horses and try that, because I think he would love it. Except for, you know, the potential of getting hit in the face with a snowball, horseshoe, or horse poop, he might be into it.
Well, we're going to be back. We want to hear from you. Have you ever done ski-joring? Maybe there's some listeners out there that have done it. We also want to hear your winter stories. You can give us a call at 347-637-3238. Remember, 5 callers today get one of our prizes, and that is the month subscription to FeedXL.com. And now we're up with Chris with the news, and then we'll be back with the weekly horse health report.
This is the Horse Radio Network News. 27-year-old Georgina Bloomberg, show jumping rider and daughter of New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, sustained a fall at last week's Syracuse Invitational Horse Show, which resulted in a slight fracture to the vertebrae and concussion. After a brief stay in hospital, Georgina went home yesterday and is eager to get back in the saddle. The top prize at the show went to Margie Engel and her Dutch Warmblood Indigo, who beat 27 riders from 6 countries to win the $100,000 Detweiler Fenton FEI World Cup qualifier presented by GNC Farm over Richard Jeffries' course. Engel had earlier captured the $30,000 TK99 Speed Derby when she and her mare Pymina L got the better of 22 starters. Also this past weekend, 23-year-old event rider Jenny Brannigan made history as the first winner of the Galway Downs CCI 3-star competition in Temecula, California, finishing on her dressage score. riding Nina Gardner's Irish sport horse gelding Cambalda, Jenny, who is originally from San Diego, made the trip from Pennsylvania, where she is based at Philip Dutton's barn, to take this inaugural prize of $7,000 in front of family and friends. Horseboard Ireland will fund a special one-off bonus payment of €25,000 if a horse purchased at the upcoming Gorsebridge eventing sale at Monart on November 11th subsequently wins a four-star international three-day event. The bonus will be paid to the purchaser of the horse at this sale, regardless of who owns the horse at the time it wins the competition. In addition, Horseboard Ireland will fund an enhanced inward buyer program, with buyers coming in from the U.S. being able to claim up to €800 towards their flight as long as they spend at least €5,000 at the sale. The new bonus scheme was being introduced on a pilot basis to emphasize that Ireland is the place to purchase a potential four-star event horse. Two Irish-bred horses have claimed four-star titles this year, with Tankerstown, ridden by Sharon Hunt, winning at Lemoolan, and Lenamore, ridden by Caroline Powell, at Burley. Two distinguished racehorses are beginning their second career as they head to the breeding barn. This year's winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic is beginning his duties as a stallion at the Hancock family's Claiborne Farm near Paris, Kentucky. Bred and raced by Claiborne and Adele Dilschneider, Blaine was retired with 9 wins, 2 seconds and 2 thirds from 13 lifetime starts. And Mind That Bird, the 50-1 odds winner of the 2009 Kentucky Derby, is enjoying his new career at Buena Suerte Ranch in Roswell, New Mexico. He ended his career with 5 wins and 4 placings from 18 career starts with earnings of $2.2 million. This is HRN News, and I'm Chris Stafford for Horses in the Morning.
Well, thank you to Chris. Of course, Chris does the eventing, dressage, and jumping radio shows here on the Horse Radio Network. You can find all of those at horseradionetwork.com. Well, Jamie, we are back, and I just wanted to say, too, that one of the other things that I really enjoyed about one of the enjoyable moments I had on in the winter was when I had my Piper pony, pony named Piper. When I had her, and we talked about yesterday, we used to take her out in the Meadowbrook cart. We had a really long lane at that farm. It was about almost a mile long. And we used to take her out when it had just snowed and it was all pretty and it was very romantic. Jennifer and I had just been, you know, just started dating then, actually. I don't think we were even married yet. It was a very romantic thing to do, take the pony in the cart out in the freshly fallen snow down the lane to get the mail. It was really cool.
I guess, huh? She married you.
25 years later, I guess it did work, for sure. Well, we have our regular segment coming up, our weekly segment on Wednesdays about this time that we're calling Horse Health Weekly with thehorse.com. And Christy West is joining us, and she is, I believe Christy's on. Christy, you're on the air. Welcome back.
I am here. It's good to be back.
Well, we're great. We're talking all about winter today. And, of course, in Lexington here, it's not going to be a very wintry day, thank goodness. But we're ready for your horse health report. And I understand you have someone on here with you, Doc, a veterinarian, correct?
I do. Joining us is Dr. Erin Denny Jones, who is the owner of Florida Equine Veterinary Services in Claremont. And she's also a former chairman of the Owner Education Committee of the AAEP, which is the American Association of Equine Practitioners, the Association of Equine Veterinarians in this country. Erin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Oh, good.
Good morning, Erin.
Good to have you here. Our topic today for the Horse Health segment is the crazy things horses eat, and I'm sure we all have some wonderful stories about that. But first, I'd like to let everyone get to know Erin a little bit. Erin, can you tell us a little bit about why you became a vet and what your practice is like?
My practice, I'll start with my practice because I don't like talking about myself very much. My practice is a 100% equine practice. It's mostly ambulatory, but we do have a clinic facility that does some sports medicine and reproductive work out of the facility. And I've been owner of it for 15 years. I've been a practicing veterinarian for 18 years. I'm a University of Missouri graduate. Go Tigers. And I've just always had a love for animals, just like any other kid. And the horses really brought my attention more than the dogs and cats did over the years. And I haven't looked back since I was 15. So that's what I knew I was going to do when I was 15, and just kept going.
That's perfect. It's always good to know what you want to do early and to be doing exactly what you want to do. How's it go? If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life?
Yes. Very true. Very true. Very
good. So let's move on to our topic today, the crazy things horses eat. We did a poll on thehorse.com a little while back to just see what our readers could think of as far as the craziest things their horses had ever eaten and drunk, and we had a huge number of responses. We had everything from meat to alcoholic drinks, and I'm not sure if that says more about the horses or the owners. we've got fruits, vegetables. We've got in some strange things. My current favorite is the wedding ring. I don't know if anybody ever got that one back. That's a little bit scary. But I was hoping we could talk a little bit today about some of those things and, you know, if any of these things are safe for horses to eat, what you should do if your horse is eating one of these things that's maybe not so good. So let's start with the meat. So we had several owners saying that horses ate anything from brats on buns with mustard to beef stew to chicken McNuggets, crawfish, fried chicken, stealing burgers
Ew.
Off the grill, which is a whole other issue we won't get into, anchovies on toast. What are your thoughts from a veterinary standpoint on horses eating meats?
Well, the first thing right off the bat is they're not going to get any nutritional value out of it. So horses are curious animals, and so they'll try about anything. And, you know, that's when they get into trouble is because they're so curious. And so they'll try any kind of somewhat good-smelling, good-tasting item you put in front of them, but whether they get any value out of it remains, you know, to their digestive system. Their system's set up for, just like a rabbit, just for, like, vegetative products going through. Grasses, any other kind of greens, because they will ferment them, and then the fermentation process is what gives them the energies. So with the meats, that's a high protein. It's going to go in and go out. It's really not going to have much effect for them.
It's not bad for them.
Is it bad, though?
No, not unless you probably got mad cow disease going on, or they've eaten large quantities of it. But usually, like I said, they're curious animals. One or two bites, not going to make a big deal to the horse.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay.
What about any issues with things like some people said their horse had stolen fried chicken out of a bucket? I mean, what about bones?
Bones I'd be concerned about, yes. Definitely be concerned about any kind of sharp items that went in, and bones would be included in that. They probably, I hate to say it, they probably swallowed it whole. And then you have these concerns of choke when they swallow things like that whole, because there is some narrowing of the esophagus when it carries itself over the heart. And they can block it up in that area and start to choke.
Now, should you, can I ask you a question here, Christy? Do you, at that point, if you know your horse has eaten, you know, a couple of fried chicken legs, if you know your horse has eaten that, is that a time to call the vet, or is it, you know, what then?
I'm assuming that's a question for me.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes. Yeah, that's all right, because you had said, Christy, I'm with her there. Yeah. It's always good to just at least give a heads up to your veterinarian to let him know what happened. And the vet may come out right away and go ahead and tube, is what we call it, tube the horse, and pass a stomach tube down into the stomach and pass some mineral oil to help move that product along. We do that all the time when they get into the feed bins, grain overload, eat products they're not supposed to. There was one that was on your list, Christy. It was 20 pounds of cat food. I think I would have wanted to go out and see that horse and tube it with some mineral oil to help move that along, because that might have some residual problems of toxicities to the horse. So, and maybe they did. Maybe that person did have their vet out right away to take care of that. I've seen horses hog feed, chicken feed, those kind of things, and there can be some products. Some of those products are made with things in them that will cause problems to the horse's digestive system or cause toxicities, which can result in laminitis and colic.
Yeah, now, actually, a couple of those things you mentioned, I have had here. I've lived on my farm for 6 months, doctor, and two of those things have happened to me. The first, right out of the block, my horse decided that he could open the tack shed, go through the tack shed, and then go to the back where I keep the feed, and he proceeded to eat 30 pounds of Equine Senior. So that was a $400 to $500 morning that I didn't really want to have.
And you brought up a very good you brought up a very good point, is they're very nimble with their mouth and their lips. They can turn doorknobs, and they can flip handles. So what I always tell people is my system is a two-lock system, and it's not two locks on one door. It's two barriers. So you put your feet into a barrier of some sort, something like with a padlock, but doesn't actually have to be a locked padlock, something that they can't flip the lid open, and then you have a lock on your door. So you have two barriers before they can actually get to that product that you don't want them to get into. And that includes chemicals for your fertilizing and your weed spreading in your yards and things like that.
The other thing my horse did, well, we have a pony and we also have a chicken coop. We only have four chickens, but my pony actually flipped open the chicken coop, got down on his knees, stuck his head in the chicken coop, and ate all of the chicken scratch that was in there, which was the most amazing feat of gymnastics ever done by a pony.
Yes. They are amazing, aren't they? They will do that. You're not the first story I've heard on that, getting down to their knees, getting underneath something. It's amazing.
Did he crow the next morning? That's my question.
Did he? Yeah, no, he did not. But I did have to watch him for colic because it's a pony, and he ate at least 5 to 10 pounds. And I'm panicked about stuff like that. So he did not crow. He did not lay an egg, unfortunately. But we did have to move the coop and move the feed, and I've just cleared out everything that is within possible reach. We even moved the chicken coop out of the field.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, that was probably the best prevention. Our best medicine is the prevention that you just did for that. And again, mine with the two barriers is the prevention. And I have to explain that to my clients because I'll say two-lock system. Well, what it really is it's a two-barrier system, not two locks on the door, because people, you know, they forget to do the locks. It just happened. It's human nature.
Or your horse takes off the entire lock, which is what the pony did, and the chicken coop, by actually just removing the entire thing with his mouth, cutting his mouth in the process, and then eating all the chicken feed. So there is no limit to what they will do to get in to whatever they want to get into.
Absolutely.
They are creative. Well, in the somewhat in the theme of horses ending up on their knees, the next thing I had on my list to talk about was alcohol. And we had some of our readers have fed their horses, or their horses have gotten into anything from Captain Morgan and Coat to shots of Hot Damn to a whole pitcher of beer. Erin, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there's never been a study that has rated or had a horse blow into a breathalyzer to see what is their level. So I can't tell you what would be a toxic level for these horses, but it's usually just more done at a party, post-show celebration, end of the day trail ride, and you're going to have a beer at the end of the day kind of thing. So usually they're not too threatening to the horse. And a lot of the stunt riders will do that as, you know, not necessarily as a beer when they're doing it in the show arenas and stuff, but they might have a can that says beer on the side of it, and their horse does have an affinity for it. But as far as being harmful to the horse, there's never been a case where a horse has gotten so toxic from those that they've had problems with the horse. They just, again, have an affinity for things that have a sweet taste to it, and then they're also very curious.
Okay.
In the 60
really
Minutes episode, Zenyatta actually was caught drinking a Guinness every day. So that's not gonna hurt Zenyatta and her chances of racing by drinking a Guinness every day?
No. Actually, it might help her. The old tale is if you give dark beer, like a Guinness, to a horse, it will help them sweat better. We've tried that here in Florida for those that come down here and they shut down. They're sweating. And we've given them dark beers, and some it works on and some it doesn't. So that's probably one of the theories, is they're trying to keep her to sweat well by giving her the dark Guinness. So, yes, we have been giving beers. I know of horses that have gotten pitchers of beers to help them with their sweating, and they have no side effects to it. Of course, some of them have sweated and some have not.
Well, we're speaking to Christy from The Horse, and we're speaking to Dr. Jones, who is from Florida Equine Veterinary Services. And we're talking about what the crazy things that your horse has eaten. And if you want to chipe in on that, give us a call at 347-637-3238. Tell us what's the craziest thing your horse has ever eaten. But go ahead, Christy. I just wanted to invite people to give us a call.
No, hey, people have wonderful stories. I'd love to hear some of them. But moving on from the alcohol, we've also had several people say that their horses had eaten wildlife, dead birds that they'd found in the pasture, on occasion a live bird or mouse. I'm not quite sure how they got a hold of the live bird, but somehow that happened to happen. Goldfish out of a fish tank. Caterpillars,
what?
Which of course makes me think of Mary-Lou-Boss syndrome in Kentucky a few years ago. Tell them, Erin, have you heard of any of those?
Yes, I have. It's been, you know, more chance than anything else. Like the goldfish in a bowl, as they were drinking, and it accidentally got sucked up. You know, it was a fish, basically. It wasn't the goldfish idea, but that's one of the stories I have. And then wildlife out in the field is, you know, they caught them and they had eaten something that was out in the field, out in the pasture, dead. It wasn't like they went straight to it; it just happened to be in their grazing path. So it's more chance. And a lot of times they're doing it now when you and I don't know about it, and they seem to be perfectly fine. But again, if they have excess amounts of certain dead things, there are some bacteria that lie in those dead animals that could disrupt their gastrointestinal tract. And again, call in the vet if you do catch it. Say, hey, this happened. The vet may want to come out, just do an exam, make sure everything's fine, or just have you watch the horse, depending on what it is. The caterpillars, that was the most devastating for Kentucky. And still can be. People are being very cautious about the tent caterpillars and them eating them and causing the male reproductive loss syndrome. So it's not necessarily all gastrointestinal. It's the toxins that are released through the gastrointestinal system, through the blood, that can affect other parts of the body. Again, laminitis, the foundering in a horse, there's just those other things that can trigger bad sequelas. So again, any of those weird things that you've seen them eat, it's still best to run them by your vet. Some may be really concerning and some may be just watch and see.
Gotcha. And of course, on occasion, a dead mouse or something can get baled into the hay as well, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's always parts in those baled hays. People don't realize that it's out in the field and they bale it up and whatever's in the field comes. That includes weeds. We have a talk every year on toxic weeds, and people are saying, oh, I don't, you know, I fertilize my pasture and I do weed master on my pasture. Well, they don't realize some of the toxic weeds come through their hay and they look differently when they're
scorpions.
Dried out.
We get scorpions in the hay here. It's horrible.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course, you have the blister beetle that everybody knows about in alfalfa, so you have to watch for those. But there are some things that can occur in hay. So when you swap out and have new batches of hay, it's always good to let the vet know if you have a colic incident that, yeah, you have a new batch of hay. Maybe it's something in that new batch of hay.
Good to know. All right, we also have a number of people who've had their horses eat various fruits and vegetables, anything from zucchinis to melons to onions to cherries and jalapeno peppers, or any particular fruits and vegetables, things that people should watch out for and make sure to keep their horses away from?
Well, they one that's noted in most of the toxicology books is the avocado, but it has to be a large amounts of avocado. And, of course, here in Florida, they'll eat the oranges and grapefruits off the grounds because we have citrus groves that have been refurbished into pastures that some of the old fruit that falls down on the ground, they'll eat. And the problem with that is they will cause choke because they will block the esophagus and they aren't able to swallow anymore.
Do they just not chew up the citrus? Is that where it causes a problem?
Yeah, they'll swallow whole, like the small tangerines and things like that. Yeah, you'd be surprised. Very surprised. It also happens in cattle, too. It's very concerning. Again, it's not just your colic that you'd worry about. It's a choke incident and something to that effect. So.
All right, I have a totally unnatural eating incident that I have a question about. We had a pony as a kid that I don't remember how it happened, but he ate a pair of gloves, little kids winter gloves. And the pony was fine. It took, you know,
yeah.
We never saw the gloves again, so we're assuming they came out in some way, shape, or form. But would it make a difference if the gloves were cotton versus polyester?
No, it won't make a difference there, but a glove would concern me. And this will go on to, and it was something Christy and I had spoken about earlier, is metal objects, but it can't even be baling twine, because they'll eat baling twine. So they've eaten rubber tires that people have turned inside out and made feeders out of up north that, you know, are great little solid feeders out in the field. They've eaten those rubber tires, and those things will cause colic. They create what we call a nidus, or a center that a bunch of more stuff can accumulate, stuff meaning dirt from the pasture down
like
here in Florida, sand.
Bad.
Yes, a pearl. Same idea. And then we get what we call an enterolith or a rock in the intestinal tract. Those are the most frustrating for veterinarians to diagnose because they'll colic and then they get better. They colic and they get better. And it's because the rock rolls into a spot and makes them colic and it rolls out. And it rolls in and it rolls out.
Wow.
And those are when we see consistent colic in a horse over time. We start to think about that and find out if they eat anything unusual. Well, half the time they don't know. It's out in the pasture.
You don't even know they ate it, yeah.
Right, but we've seen hay nets in colic surgery. We've seen, like I said, the rubber tires in colic surgery, all sorts of unique things. And then those enteroliths, the rocks, those are the most fascinating because you can X-ray them and you can see the center if there's a metal object. A lot of times it's not. It's just a makeup of the pasture content that they have as a high chemical content, and it starts creating the small rock, and then the rock starts gathering more and more and more stuff over time. It doesn't necessarily have to start off with a metal object or any object. But a lot of times you'll see like a washer, a nail, roofing nail, we've seen sometimes in the center of these, all sorts of interesting items.
What's
wedding ring might
thing?
Be in the middle of an enterolith of a horse if they see it come back out.
What's the weirdest thing that you've seen? You're in Florida, so I imagine that you've seen some strange things. What is the weirdest thing that you've been called out to for a horse eating?
Oh, boy. I'd have to say the hay net.
Yeah.
The hay net was probably the most unique, yeah. And, you know, it was retrieved at colic surgery. And that was the smartest way to go for the horse. We didn't want to wait until it became an absolute emergency. But, yeah, the hay net. The hay net was it.
You know what? Us horse husbands hate hay nets with a passion anyway. So I say outlaw hay net. That's my...
Nice hay nets are the ones that have the hole in the middle and they don't have the multiple openings all the way around, the actual net one. So the hay bags I like much better because they can't see the hole in the middle.
All horse husbands of America officially like Dr. Jones right now.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I don't have hay nets in my barn.
Good. Well,
so, Dr.
Christy,
Jones,
do you
ride?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
You said you have horses. What do you do?
So, at the moment now I don't. I am in the process of raising a 2-year-old child. So my last horse left me right prior to that 2-year-old being born. So now I'm in the works of trying to get back on the horse again. But mostly I grew up with Western Pleasure and barrel racing, and now my interest is in eventing and dressage.
That's my girl.
Running the horse.
I take it I got another fan out
others?
There.
Was there any others on your list, Christy?
I have a couple others, but I know we're also running short on time. Probably the last thing I wanted to address is human snack foods, because we had a whole huge range of those, as you can guess. But one of the first things that a lot of people would ask about is whether the sugar in those snack foods for a horse that has Cushing's or metabolic syndrome or anything like that might be a concern.
Yeah, let's do that one, and then we'll wrap.
Okay.
Yeah, those would be a concern, but they'd have to, again, take large amounts, large quantities. Most of the time, the people are not feeding like a full bag of Doritos. Or a 6-pack or 12-pack of Pepsi. They're probably just doing a can or a little bit taste while they're eating, and those things aren't going to create too much harm.
So just like in a human.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry. Just like in a human, one tasty cake is fine, but a box full of tasty cakes, not so much.
Yeah, probably don't put the box of donuts out in front of their stall if you know they're going to be snatching it up, because you'll get less.
And that's what I was going to tell you is at a horse show we left a whole table full of like sandwich things. My horse ate an entire jar of pickles, so I guess that's okay as long as he doesn't get any more.
Or he doesn't get the jar itself. Yeah, how did he get them out of the jar?
He knocked it over and ate every pickle and the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought a horse would eat a pickle, but he did. Well, you guys, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, the Horse Health Report, we've had Christy West from thehorse.com and Dr. Aaron Denny Jones, owner of Florida Equine Veterinary Service. And we'd love to have you back on, Dr. Jones, anytime. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you.
I've enjoyed my morning with you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you.
Thanks,
and
Christy,
we'll talk to you next week.
Yes, absolutely. Y'all have a great week.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, if you want to call in and talk to us about the crazy things that your horse has eaten or your winter stories, you can do that at 347-637-3238. We have some time left today to chat with everybody. And we are going to be giving away up to five of the one-month subscriptions for FeedXL, worth $25 each at FeedXL.com. Well, I've been waiting to tell you our story, and I think Jennifer's still on there, and she can chime in because we lived through this together. So, Janie, we lived back at that mile-long lane. We had about 100 acres. Where our house sat, you could not see another house. It was completely isolated. And the lane was narrow lane, had trees and like a dirt wall on either side. So it was one of those typical Pennsylvania lanes that goes back to a farm. It was dirt. It was not paved. And I had been sick. I had pneumonia, actually. I had a bad case of pneumonia right before this happened. We had a lot of horses at the farm that time. We had a big bank barn, and, of course, bank barns are pretty prevalent in Pennsylvania as well, and we had a lot of pastures. We had 100 acres, so it was a pretty big farm. Well, it was a very old farmhouse. When we first moved in, it didn't have any heat except for the coal fire furnace in the basement, which didn't work right. So either it was freezing cold upstairs, or it was so hot. There was one day we were in the living room watching TV. It was so hot that the wallpaper was peeling off the walls above us. It was that
hot. Oh, my
hot.
Gosh.
Yes. So we'd
no
have
wonder
to open
you
the
got
windows.
Pneumonia.
We'd have to open the windows in the middle of winter. The upstairs of this old farmhouse did not have any heat at all. There was no radiators or there was nothing upstairs. So it was right before, it was in the middle of winter, and I had pneumonia. Well, one night we had, it was 19, and Jennifer, you're going to have to help me on this. It was 1993 or 6?
I think it was 93.
93. It was a blizzard of 93, and it was a blizzard. We actually slept downstairs in the kitchen on the floor because it was so windy and so cold, and the upstairs of this house was so cold. And what was happening was the wind was blowing so hard. It was 50, 60 mile an hour winds, and it snowed feet of snow and huge drifts, is the back porch of the house, the enclosed back porch of the house that was open to the kitchen, actually had snow drifts in it. We had snow inside of all the windows in the house. On the windowsills, there was snow. It was that it had blown in that hard, and it was so cold in the house that there was snow everywhere. Well, our power went off that night, too. Our power stayed off for almost a week. And we were snowed in completely. The drifts outside of our house, there was about 100 yards between the house and the barn. The drifts were completely covering our Chevy pickup truck. You could not see the truck. And we had to climb over the drifts, 6, 8, 10-foot drifts, to get to the barn. You had to walk on, you had to crawl on your hands and knees over the drifts to be able to get to the barn. Well, you can imagine what our lane was like. Our lane had drifted up to 12 to 15 feet in some places. So,
that sucks.
Yeah, and the barn roof had blown off. It was a metal barn roof. It was pretty rusted out.
It
and
didn't
most
cave
of the barn,
in. It blew off. It was like an orange peel.
It peeled off. But the problem with that was there were pieces of metal barn roof in the drifts all over the farm.
Oh,
and
no.
You couldn't see them. So when we got out to the barn, we found several of the horses that were in the stalls. They were all okay, but several of them were covered in inches of snow on their butts because it had blown in from every crack and crevice in the barn. The upstairs of the barn, where the hayloft was, because it was a bank barn, had about, 2, 3 inches of snow over all the hay, over everything.
Yeah, it really fouled up our hay stores. Yeah,
it did, and it was amazing. It was just amazing. We were without power for about a week. We didn't plan for this one, so we didn't have the food that we should have had. I had pneumonia while helping out with all of this, and we couldn't get anybody to do our lane. So it was a week until we got a bulldozer. It took the bulldozer. The bulldozer was coming back, actually, by chance. We didn't hire them. There was a gas line that went through our property, and they needed to check the gas line for something, so they hired a bulldozer. He was kind enough to come the extra quarter mile to our house when he saw we were snowed in after a week. It took him 9 hours of moving snow to get down to the lane. with a full-size bulldozer. That's how deep the snow was. So it was one, probably, Jennifer, would you say, it was kind of a fun week in some ways, but it was a very long week in others, and we were getting pretty hungry by the time that all ended.
I just remember standing at the kitchen window. You could see across the top field to where the driveway was. And for the most part, the driveway was lower than the fields around it. The bank on either side of the driveway was between 4 and 6 feet for its entire length. And about day four or so, we heard beeping. And you know that familiar beep that construction machines make? We're going, oh, something's going on. And by evening, we could see the very top of this bulldozer up there. And I just remember standing, and I was so excited watching this bulldozer coming down our driveway because we didn't know who he was. He just arrived magically, you know. And
he's your hero.
Yeah, he's our hero.
He was.
And we crawled out on our hands and knees with cameras in hand when he got a little bit closer to the house because the pipeline he had to dig out was still a good 100 yards from our house. And we got out there, and he's going, holy crap, there's people back here. We felt like the Donner Party or something. And he very kindly finished it all off and got the whole way to our house. But, and yeah, that's pretty much the reason Glenn hates winter, is that 1 week of his life just ruined winter for him.
I totally agree. And now listening to how your house was set up, first of all, obviously you're going to get pneumonia living in a drafty, ridiculous, unheated place in Pennsylvania.
But it was so pretty.
Oh, no, it's not okay. It's horrible. Cold is terrible. Oh, gosh, your poor horses. And the bulldozer, you know, like you see it coming over the horizon, and it's like there's hope. Because poor emaciated Glenn and Jennifer without any food at all, no power. It's like going into a third world back there, I'm sure.
Well, and we were completely unprepared for this whole thing, so that by the time day four rolled around, we had run out of firewood and coal for the furnace. So we were going out into the barn, and we were finding scraps. You know, when you're a farm in Pennsylvania, you always have stuff. We're busting up old kitchen furniture and throwing it in the furnace and stuff.
Yeah, we were burning the barn by the end. It was
a barn burning party. Well, you know what? You know what this whole story does to me is in July, when it's 117 degrees here in Phoenix and I'm cussing and I'm absolutely miserable, I'm going to think of your story and go, you know what? I don't have it that bad. I'll be okay.
Yeah.
I can make it.
You
at
should.
Least
you
I have
should
air conditioning.
Yeah, well, Jennifer, I was trying to think of the crazy things that some of our horses might have eaten. Do you remember any?
Well, as growing up as a kid, we were backwoods kind of pony owners growing up, and the same pony that ate the gloves also ate a loaf of bread while it was still in the bag. And this was apparently some kind of a garbage gut pony because, you know, he ate earthworms. we had one that ate bananas, you know.
You know, I had a pony growing up. I was that girl in Atlanta that had the pony. And we had a barn, but we had no horse knowledge at all. And we had a rat problem in the barn. So my dad goes out and sets out all these little rat poisons and inside the barn. Well, of course, the pony, much like the pony I have now, found her way into the barn and ate probably, you know, a good 10 pounds of rat poison. Just went through every trap. It was horrible. Yeah, so here I am having to give my horse, my pony, vitamin K shots like 3 times a day to bring her out of the rat poison incident. And she actually didn't get laminitis and she actually survived.
Wow, that was a tough pony.
So you guys, it has been so much fun today being you know, we would like to first of all thank our guests. Great segment from thehorse.com. Thanks so much to Christy West and Dr. Aaron Denny Jones of Florida Equine Veterinary Services. We also got to learn a lot about skijoring from Jeff Smith, the president of the North American Ski Joring Association. And you definitely want to go on YouTube and check that out because you will be amazed what people will do in the snow to keep from being bored. And also Jackie Baker from RegardingHorses.com, her blog. She got to come on and talk a little bit about the world in the blogger sphere, you know. But be sure to listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at thehorseradionetwork.com. And you can also follow us on Facebook. We're trying to break 300. So search
Speaking
for Horses
of which,
in the Morning.
We're almost there. We're at 297.
Oh, my gosh. Three more.
Three more. Three more today. We need to get three more. So.
Well, we have come a long way, so thank everybody for being a part of our Facebook, and that's where you learn if you win all the prizes and find out if you won Feed XL.
And if you miss a live show, of course, you can listen to the recorded versions on our website at horsesinthemorning.com, on any of our affiliate websites, which are growing by the day, or on iTunes. You never need to miss an episode of Horses in the Morning. We'll be back Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern with Jessica Newman from Just World International and our regular segment called Vet Stories. And we'll, of course, have more calls from our listeners from around the horse world. We thank Back on Track at backontrackproducts.com for being our title sponsor today. Say goodbye, Jamie.
Goodbye, everybody.